a beautiful day out there, and glad to see all of you here today. The title of this message is Believe in Our Glorious Future. To believe in that glorious future. Mankind without God cannot seem to get it right. If you were to ask if you could bring them back from the grave, Marx and Engels, when they developed communism, they probably were reasonably sincere and reasonably believed that it would solve mankind's problems. As you know, of course, it was an absolute disaster. I've got a book about the 100 million people killed by their own governments during the reign of, as one president called it, the evil empire, the communist empire. And it's still pretty terrible for people in North Korea even to this day. When LBJ started the Great Society, I'm sure he had good intentions. But we can now look back and see that what it did was it rewarded people for not having fathers. And more kids, no fathers, actually expanded poverty, actually created more poverty and crime, etc. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at how wonderful it's going to be a son of God and how the world needs what I'm saying the family of God in total, not just us, but we'll be part of that. How the family of God is going to holistically solve the problems of the world and bring the world paradise. First of all, to really heal mankind's problems, you have to take care of the whole man. You have to guide him both spiritually and physically. I won't read the verses, but you all know Revelation 2:27, Revelation 5:10 says, God's heirs, that's us, will rule the entire earth with a rod of iron. Well, what will that rulership be like? Let's go to Isaiah 30. There's an interesting prophecy in Isaiah 30 about when Israel does repent and what God is going to do. And I think it'll give us some keys as to the way things might work. Isaiah 30, we're going to read verse 19 and 21. Isaiah 30, 19. For the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem, and they shall weep no more. In other words, there won't be crying, no more tears. He will be very gracious unto you at the voice of your cry. When he shall hear it, he will answer you. And though the Lord gives you the bread of adversity, you know, they may have problems now, and the water of affliction, yet shall not your teachers be removed into a corner anymore, but your eyes shall see your teachers, and your ears shall hear a word behind them saying, this is the way, walk you in it. When you turn to the right, you turn to the left. And I imagine a world where, you know, people are still human in the millennium and the great white throne judgment. And they're, we might call it a controlled atmosphere. But they're still carnal, and they start conspiring to do something bad or evil. And all of a sudden, a spirit being pops up, poof, on the right, and says, walk, this is the right way, walk you in it. Then they start sneaking around, something else they shouldn't do, poof, a spirit being pops up on the other side, maybe with a little bit of glow so they know it's not just their cousin or something. This is the way you're supposed to behave. And they won't be able to get away with a lot of stuff. And in that controlled atmosphere, everything will be as it should be. Think about the world as we see it right now. You realize you could give all kinds of foreign aid to certain parts of the world that have all kinds of problems. It would not solve their problem. It could even extend things, could even make it worse, more stuff to fight over. But until you can control the governments, the religions, and bring people back into connection with God and God's blessings, holistically heal the man, the problems will not be solved. Only God can solve problems. I want to just, now here's some things that some church groups have discovered when it comes to helping people. And I believe these are the kinds of things that will be done by the family of God, which will include us and the world tomorrow. They say here that a lot of people have lost the art of parenting. In other words, their parents didn't have parents who knew how to parent. So there's, you know, but so that means a lot of problems. Individuals are in need often, have low self-esteem, do not believe that they have the potential to make a difference in their own lives. They only focus on what others can do for them or give them. That's all they see. Secondly, the best way to change the need situation is to change the focus from the need to the person. Because everyone will be required to go to church, and the focus will be on how they can grow spiritually, how they can get close to God. You know, Isaiah 35 says, in the world tomorrow, knowledge of God will be like water on the bottom of the ocean. It'll be there for everybody. That's what the world needs. They mention another thing here. The giving of things impacts a life. While investing in someone through a relationship can really transform a life. Where you want to help them develop a relationship with God. That's really what the world needs. I'm not saying they don't need things. Things are important, but things by themselves will not solve the problem. Because I think during LBJ's time, they tripled the spending on welfare and social programs and only increased poverty. Things didn't solve the problem. And trials are part of life. There's some things that you just have to work through, and God will help you work through them. So as future sons of God, I believe we can help holistically heal the world. And maybe we don't understand everything God's going to do, but we don't need to when God's here and all the great saints will be part of the team, but we'll learn whatever we need to know of what needs to be done. But it's a glorious future we have. Let's just go to Revelation 21. I just want you to think about the glorious future that the world has and that we're going to be part of creating. Revelation 21, verse 3. And this is near the end of God's plan. After the millennium, thousand-year reign of Christ and the great white throne judgment period, probably 100 years. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he shall dwell with them, and they shall be his people. And God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears. I mean, it's that word, A-L-L. All tears. All tears are going to be wiped away. And that is going to happen from their eyes, and there shall be no more death. Think about no more death. There was a song I used to have on my 8-track that I loved back when I was in Austin, P. And it's called Forever Young. It's a great song. Forever Young. I'd like to be... Anyway, it's a great song, and if I start singing it, I'll embarrass my wife. Just don't sing it. But think about it. Everybody in the world will be forever young and vital. You'll be a spirit being. You will never, ever die. Neither sorrow nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. That is the world that we're going to help bring in. No grief. We can be part of that glorious future if we believe that God will help us. We have to have faith in God. Stay energized, even during the dark days ahead. Because you can make a good argument that the years between now and the return of Christ are the years where Satan will have a lot of influence. We're starting to see his influence in certain parts of the world right now. You know, demonstration. One person said you could break up the word demonstration into demon. Can't you see the negative spiritual influence out there? But a new age is dawning when the sons of God will rule this world and guide the world into paradise. We need to have faith and keep renewing that faith. Let's go to Ephesians 4. Keep renewing that faith that God is out there and that God will help us. Just remember that God is out there and God will help us. Ephesians 4, verse 22. Paul writes, verse 22, Ephesians 4, that you put off concerning the former conduct, that's really what modern language means, conduct, the old man which is corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. We need to renew our mind and just ask God, when you slip and fall or you get discouraged, ask God to pour out his grace and to renew us so we can get stronger again and keep on going, because it's going to be, at least it'll seem to us, like a long struggle to get there in a world which, at least in some areas, is going to get more and more evil and more ungodly. And that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Verse 25, wherefore, putting away lying, speaking every man truth unto his neighbor, for we are members of one another. And we should encourage each other, because I think that's part of it. Use faith to encourage and energize ourselves, and then a church, encourage each other. And ask for God to renew you and encourage you. And we can do it by trusting in God. Trust that God will get us through. Come to church, encourage others, and trust that God will get us through. And that everything we experience will be good for us. Because, you know, Paul says, all things work for the good of those that love God. Going further to 2 Timothy 4. And 2 Timothy 4 reads, we'll pick it up. 2 Timothy 4, verse 7. And this is Paul, probably near the end of his life. He says, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I've kept the faith. As you go through the book of Acts, you realize that Paul turned the world upside down. He actually helped much of the world kick rank paganism and idolatry and switch to the true God, so much so that there were riots. You know, Acts 16, 17, 18, and 19, and you'll see Paul literally turned the world upside down. He did fight a good fight. Hence, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness. Now, granted, Paul is greater than we are, but in a lesser extent, we have a crown of righteousness laid up for us if we remain faithful and hang into it. And I know we don't deserve it. We're quite unworthy, but that is the whole point. We don't get the crown because we're worthy. We get it because of the grace of Jesus Christ. If we just let Christ work in us and hang in there, which I know isn't going to always be easy, we have a crown of righteousness waiting for us. Wouldn't it be nice to say, you could go to Darfur where all those horrible problems are going on and have the power to really solve the problem? I don't mean just temporarily feed a few people, then they're back in the same mess next month. I mean literally solve the problem and give them, well, a happy world, a positive world. I mean, and that will happen someday when we get the crown of righteousness, and we'll be part of a team. We might have a lesser role, but, you know, I'll be happy whatever role God gives me in the, you know, in the whole thing. A crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, as Paul's saying, but unto all them that love his appearing. We should be looking forward to God's appearing, knowing that we, like Paul, will have a crown of righteousness. Our opportunity to be in God's family is coming. Paul knew that crown. If we can kind of, in our own mind's eye and our attitude, feel it, see it, sense it, believe it. Because there are a lot of discouraging things that are going to happen between now and the return of Christ. If we can be encouraged by realizing the crown is there. One way to think about it, if God didn't have a plan for this world, and if God were not going to intervene, you know sooner or later the bad, crazy people would get atomic weapons and biological and chemical weapons, and they'd either poison or blow up the world. I mean, you know that, don't you? Just a matter of time, right? But God, Christ won't let it happen. And anyway, it tells you, oh, the world's going to go on just like it is now for many, 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 many more centuries. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know the timing, don't get me wrong, but I know it's coming. And it's probably not too far off. We need to be encouraged by thinking about that crown that'll be sitting on my bald head. Well, hopefully it'll be I wonder if I'll get my hair back when I'm a spirit being. Jesse's wondering the same thing, right? But it doesn't matter. whatever happens, or Bifers, whether the same thing. But what it's like to be a spirit being. But anticipate that crown, and that we will be part of a team that will do great things. Now, I know it's hard to believe. Little old us, we're going to do great things. Believe it, feel it, think it. Ephesians 4. Let's slip over one page to verse 17. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. Now, this is Paul During some of his travels, you will see some of it in the book of Acts, when he was on his way to Rome as a political prisoner, Christ appeared to him, but probably at other times too. Strengthen me, that by the preaching might be fully known, that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. We don't know exactly what Paul is referring to, but at certain points in Paul's life, Christ came to Paul and said, trust me, it's going to work out. You're going to achieve your goal of witnessing to all the Gentiles. Some people believe that Paul, either at Ephesus or Rome, fought lions in the arena. He doesn't actually say that, and you can say, maybe that's speaking metaphorically, but let's just assume it isn't. Paul and three or four Christians were thrown out there with a few spears against two or three lions. Whatever the case is, God got him through it, right? He was alive to write this letter, and I believe after this letter, he went on another trip of several years, reinforcing the many churches he developed. At least that's what secular history says. My point is, if Christ came to Paul and helped him withstand lions in the arena, or maybe it was figurative lions, spiritual lions, trust that God will be with us, and we can face down whatever lions, hopefully they don't have to fight real lions, but whatever lions appear in our life, trust that Christ will get us through it. We have to have faith in God. Trust in God. Paul trusted God. Verse 18, and the Lord shall deliver me from every evil work and will preserve me unto the heavenly kingdom, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen. And Paul was preserved from all kinds of trials. When you read 2 Corinthians, he just lists them all off. At least until the time he was ready for Paul to die as an older man. But we need to trust that God will be with us. Trust that God will get us to glory, because glory is our goal. Think about what it will be like to be a baby God. We'll actually glow. Remember when Moses went on the mountaintop and he actually couldn't see God's glory? God had to hide him in a rock and shield him. He only saw the back of God passing by like that. Even that little bit, when Moses came down the mountain for several weeks, he glowed so much he had to put a thing over his face because it scared all the people. That's how much God glows. Well, we're going to see him as he is, because we're going to be like him. We're going to glow. We'll be a lesser glow, of course, a small light bulb, and he's a big bulb. But think about that glory. We just have to trust God and ask him to get us through, just like Paul did. Let's go to Hebrews, the second chapter. In Hebrews 2, and I want us to be encouraged, because I do see a lot of discouraging things happening in the world. And it's easy to get discouraged. The devil seems to be having his way all over the world. You're thinking, are we getting close to the end? Well, anyway, we'll see how that works out. Hebrews 2, verse 3. And Paul writes to the Jewish Christians, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? And I want to emphasize the word so great a salvation. I mean, we're not just going to be sitting up somewhere shuffling through harp music and looking at the beatific vision and going, oh, like some people. I mean, we're going to be in God's family, remaking the world. And I wonder, after we've gotten the whole planet Earth and all that, and God brings his Earth becomes the headquarters of you know, God's throne comes to Earth, and becomes the headquarters of the universe, and they think Earth is in the middle of the universe, and the Earth the universe is humongous and expanding. Who knows what we'll be doing in the future? It'll be interesting. But so great a salvation. I want to just mention that word, so great a salvation, what it's like to be a spirit being. Reminds me of a corny story I've told before, but I like the corny story. These two elderly people in their late 80s are in bed, and the lady wakes up, and she says, I'm dead, I'm dead. Her husband says, no, you're not dead. She says, I'm dead, I'm dead, I know it. And he says, no, you're not dead. She says, I am dead. He says, no, you're not dead. Let me pinch you. You're not dead. She says, well, if I'm not dead, how come I woke up and I don't feel any pain? When you get older, that joke will make more sense to you. You all, this is a young group here today. It'll make more sense to you when you get older. But think about it. You will feel no pain ever.
You'll be like Superman, because it says we'll meet Christ in the sky, so we'll be able to fly, except without the cape and the tights. And you won't have to worry about no kryptonite. I mean, there'll be nothing. You'll be impervious. Think about it. You'll be able to fly off, and at least looking at what we see in the Bible, I guess you can disappear when you want to disappear, and then suddenly appear, maybe in human form or however you want to do it. I'm sure there's probably a lot to it, but think about being impervious to pain. Be indestructible. And to have God's mind much greater than the human mind. I'm sure we'll grow as well once we're spirit beings. Let me finish reading what Paul said in Hebrews 2. How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord, was confirmed to us by them that heard him? Notice Christ brought that word to the world. Hebrews 2, verse 9. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man. For it became him for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory. So what did Christ's death do? It brings many sons unto glory. I want to emphasize the word sons unto glory. We are the sons of God, and if we, as GTA says, we're begotten now, but if we hang into the point of spiritual birth when Christ comes back, we'll be the bona fide sons of God, bringing many sons unto glory to make the captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. So we get it because Christ's grace, because what Christ suffered, not because of ourselves, but don't neglect so great a salvation. Hebrews 3, just over a page, Hebrews 3:13. But exhort one another daily while it is called today. Now, if you go through that whole thing, you'll know it's really referring to the Sabbath when it says today. But the point I want to make is, he says, exhort one another daily while it's called today. In other words, encourage each other. And I believe if we encourage each other, that will encourage us. In other words, if you want to encourage yourself, encourage somebody else. So when you come to church, try to encourage your fellow brothers and sisters to not give up, not get discouraged. Keep on trucking. Exhort one another daily while it's called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. You know, because the devil's world is very tricky, very deceitful. We want you to get into certain sins. You don't want to see the truth. You don't want to know the truth. You only want to do what you want to do, whether it's drugs or booze or babes. I mean that respectfully. You know what I mean. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. So encourage each other. And let's go to 2 Peter. It's just back, a book, just book or two back, 2 Peter 3. 2 Peter 3:3 reads, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lust. Now, they're scoffing at creation. And think about believing that all these well-designed animals don't have a designer. Like, we're looking at a TV show on one of the Christian stations about the bombardier beetle, which also was written up by our church's magazine. You realize that beetle can shoot his explosive chemicals on all directions, and has two chambers to separate so it doesn't explode until he projects it out of his body. How could that evolve by accident? Think about it, because if he didn't have it just right and then combine it and shoot it out when you combine the chemicals, he'd have blown himself to bits. And this, it's not an easy chemical procedure to do. But, and by the way, do you know there's some birds who go from the Arctic Circle all the way to Australia and New Zealand, the Arctic Tern. And those, they fly much of the globe, and most of it over water, where they don't stop and eat. They consume their own organs in flight. And then the organs grow back once you get to the food source. And they're flying over areas where there are plenty of food if they would just go off course. And how could you evolve that? And think about the navigation. You know, flying, you know, you got to navigate. Anyway, the all point is creation. People scoff We're going to laugh at the theory of evolution someday. It's going to be a laughing stock. A laughing stock. But people scoff at God and oh, yeah, the Messiah is coming back to save the world. Yuck, yuck, yuck. And saying, where is the promise of his coming? Verse 4. For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. And I understand that's how people feel, but the Messiah is coming back. Paradise is coming. God is not going to fail in his human project. And if this is the best God can do, it's a failure. Most of the world is unchristian. Most of the world lives under oppression, starvation, stupidity, superstition. You all know that's true, without even my name and places and details. And even in the more wealthy countries like America, we have tons of decadence, don't we? You all know that, right? And it's growing, right? So if this is the best God can do, he's failed, and it isn't. God is coming back. He is going to succeed. Let me look at 1 John 3:2. And I know we've looked at it before, but I like this verse. So I'm going to look at it one more time. 1 John 3:2. 1 John 3:2 says, "Beloved, now are we the sons of God. We are begotten, but it does not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear," meaning Christ, "we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." In other words, we're going to be spirit beings just like Christ. Christ is God. We're going to be God. We're a baby God. We're going to see him as he is. That is wonderful. That is fabulous. Wow. And during the discouraging days and years ahead of us, try to remember that crown that we're going to wear someday. We're going to be, you know, lesser members, but still in God's family, in there with great people like Abraham, Moses, Daniel, Paul, probably, I'm assuming, Joseph, Peter, and think of all, and many great people that probably aren't written up yet. We're going to be in there with them. David, isn't that going to be wonderful? And you can ask David about all his great adventures. And Paul, why did you word it this way instead of that way? You can ask him. Anyway, it's going to be wonderful. We're going to be baby gods. We should look forward to that. We really should. All I can say is, wow, it's coming. Now, just in closing, just two things I want to emphasize in closing. Number one is, remember we have a wonderful future. A wonderful future. Oh, one more verse I meant to turn to. I'm sorry. Anyway. 1 Corinthians 15. And we'll probably talk about this on Monday as well. But I meant to turn to this verse. 1 Corinthians 15. We're going to pick it up in verse 50. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 50. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 50. And then we'll conclude. You know that old joke? What does it mean when the preacher looks at his watch? Absolutely nothing. Not quite that bad. But one more verse. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 50. "Now this I say, brethren, the flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, neither doth corruption inherit incorruption." So we will inherit incorruption. Incorruption means you're incorruptible. That means you're indestructible. That means, you know, bullets would bounce off you, knives would not hurt you. You'll be, you know, they got these secret super germs that you get in hospitals to kill people. What's a germ going to be to you? Nothing. You'll be incorruptible. "Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep." That's what death really is, sleep. "But we shall all be changed in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump." And trumpets is coming up in a few days. "For the trumpet shall sound." You know, Christ sounding that trumpet, and he comes back leading a powerful army of angels to take over this world and crush the beast. "The dead shall rise incorruptible, and we shall be changed." We will no longer be physical. We'll be spiritual. I like that term. Incorruptible. Indestructible. "For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality." And as I get older,
you realize corruptible, you got a bad hip, and if you run you sleep on it the wrong way, it hurts. And, well, anyway, the older people here know what I mean. We're getting more corruptible all the time. It would be great to be incorruptible. So when this incorruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, meaning you will never, ever, 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 never, ever get old and die, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. Think about that. Death is swallowed up in victory. That's Christ's ultimate victory. Death is swallowed up in victory. It's just ahead of us, maybe just a few years over the horizon. The devil will try to get us to fall away. A lot of people have fallen away. The various false doctrines or discouragement or you worship a man and then, you know, you look at human things too much. I would just say, be strong. Hang in there. Don't get discouraged. So, in conclusion, now I'm at the conclusion. The number one thing is, we have a wonderful future. We really do. A wonderful future. We will be able to turn around this world holistically. And what I think I'm, well, you know, obviously whatever God does, I'll be fine with it, needless to say. Who am I to tell God? But what I think holistically will mean in the future, I'm sure people like, probably for all the Gentile countries, probably people like Daniel and Paul will probably be in charge, underneath Christ, of course. And they'll probably say things like, wait a minute, we can't really solve their problem until we help the man and the woman totally. That is, spiritually, physically. Of course, God will bless them with good soil, and God will decide who gets what land, and the land will all be prosperous. So some of the political issues will all be solved, and everyone will have counselors they can talk to, whether they want to or not. It'll be a controlled environment where everyone will be given the right environment. We think we know what people can achieve, but I believe that even just physically speaking, with the devil locked away, of course, just physically speaking, physical human beings under good leadership, under good churches, can do a lot. I remember there were times in Ambassador College where one of the top ministers would give a sermon about behavior on campus. And the next week, a lot of people tried to put it into practice. And I realized Ambassador College wasn't Camelot. I'm not that naive. But still, it was a good thing. And I saw a lot of positive things. Well, it'll be even greater in the world tomorrow because there'll be no devil. Whatever media exists will be controlled in a positive way. You won't have to worry about your kids getting on the internet and being influenced by bad influences, or yourself, or bad things in textbooks at school. There are a lot of bad things in textbooks at school nowadays. And all the other bad influences on the radio and music. Oh, we could talk about music, but I will spare you. I'm sure you're aware of some of what's in the popular culture. I hope this doesn't offend anybody, even in the nicer music, country music, there are some things there that probably aren't so spiritually good either, though it's not nearly as bad as rap. But the point I'm getting at is the bad influences all over, everywhere. When all that is taken away, and everything, nothing but good influences, and I imagine every family will be close to their kids and their grandkids and their grandkids. They'll like little family groupings. And, you know, you'll have your grandparents. And maybe your great-grandparents will someday pass away and go into the spirit world, but will still be there to help you when you need them. Just think of what that world will be like and everything working the way it should work. A green paradise. Whatever you think a green paradise should look like, that's what God will create in the millennium and then the great white throne judgment. And then we'll all be spirit beings. And, of course, maybe it'll be a whole new thing then. But it will be wonderful. And won't it be a fabulous thing to be a baby God in that atmosphere? And I believe as baby gods, we will grow too. Probably our growth will be exponential compared to our growth now. Once you don't have human nature dragging us down and all the bad things that make us bad people,
I can imagine we're going to grow greatly. And think of the influences. And if we're in the first resurrection, and we're the small harvest, the first resurrection, we're the small group. And as the small group, we're going to be closer to the center. You know, in John, Christ told the apostles, God has, you know, many rooms for you. Think of that as office suites near the headquarters. You think of God's throne, and there's God the Father and Jesus Christ in the center, and maybe the patriarchs and the apostles, maybe the outer wall, the people around them, and then others. But we're going to be not that far away from the headquarters, because we'll, you know, what is it, 1 in 100,000 maybe is in the first resurrection, 1 in 1,000,000. We're going to be near the center. Think of how wonderful that's going to be at the top of God's government, I assume for all eternity, or whatever God does. Of course, it will be fine with me, but that is logically what's going to happen. We'll be baby gods, and when you get discouraged, think of that crown that's going to be on my and your bald head, and maybe not too many years if we remain faithful. And when we slip up or we get discouraged, then fall back on our trust in God, trust in how great the grace of Christ is, trust in the power of God, and buck ourselves up, because we're not doing it on our own. Believe in God, believe in Christ, and believe in their saving power.